I have an anxiety about sermons, not so much about giving them, but about listening to them. I worry that we hear sermons week after week. Someone spends a lot of time during the week figuring out stuff to say. We sit and listen politely. We go out and say, thank you, that was lovely. And life goes on entirely unchanged. So I've got a little exercise for us today. If you look at the back of your handout, there's three boxes, and this is not a scorecard, but it's a little active listening exercise. I'd like to encourage you to think of something you can write in these boxes. If you hear something interesting, or maybe thought-provoking, not just trivia interesting, but interesting that will make you think more, you could jot it down in that first box. And or if you hear something challenging, something that makes you think, wow, I really need to shift course, you could write that down in the second box. If you see something encouraging, something that really feeds you and gives you momentum to go on in the Christian life, you could write that down in the third box. So that's your little exercise. We're going to look today at John chapter 9. It'd be good to have that open. It's on page 1074. My maternal grandfather passed away a few years ago. He was a lovely country bloke. And for a good 10 years or so before he died, he had seriously depleted eyesight. After a while, he was pronounced legally blind, which entitled him to a nice discount on his car rego. Although he was blind, he continued to play golf with the help of his friends who would watch where the ball went. When we'd visit, he would continue to show us around town, pointing out things that he himself couldn't see. I mentioned this to sort of illustrate blindness a little bit, but the man in our story today, actually almost nothing like my grandfather. My grandfather had decades of seeing before he started to lose his sight. The man in our story, we're told, was blind from birth. He also lived in a different time and place, of course. No guide dogs, no braille, no local newspaper on cassette, no tactile indicators at the edge of the footpath. He wouldn't have been able to learn a trade. There was no disability pension. So we're told in verse 8 that he's a local landmark, begging by the side of the road. Blind people today will tell you there are social implications of being blind. But again, for this man, things were significantly worse. Because there is a general perception in first century Judaism that if you had some condition like blindness, then you must somehow deserve it. In verse 2, Jesus' disciples assume, wrongly, that this man's blindness was caused by some specific sin, either by him or his parents. They, like the community in general, and probably like the man himself, assume that this man is guilty before God. So, unable to look after himself, living in poverty, the poorest of the poor, a social outcast, and presumably under divine judgment. Only a miracle could help him. And I want to show that in this passage, there's one miracle that happens quickly. There's one miracle that happens gradually. And there's one miracle that doesn't happen at all. One miracle happens quickly. Jesus sees the blind man by the side of the road. He rejects the disciples' assumption about the cause of the blindness. And then he says, now is the time. We have to do the work of God. And he heals him. It's interesting how elsewhere Jesus heals with a word. Take up your mat and walk, he says to the lame man in chapter 5. And he can heal by remote control. Go back to Capernaum, your son will live, he says to the royal official in chapter 4. This one is done not by a word, not by remote control, but by spit and mud. I've often thought it'd be quite a fun kids' talk. Hand out a little bit of dirt to each kid. Now, children, spit on your hand and rub it on something, see if it fixes it. Jesus does this, rubs it on the man's eyes, sends him off to wash, and he comes back seeing. It's a big, loud miracle, isn't it? Happens pretty quickly. One minute this guy is feeling his way down the road with dirt on his face. The next minute he's washed in the pool, and for the first time in his life, he can see. It's not a minor fix either, nothing superficial here. Modern science has shown that if he was blind from birth, his brain would never have learnt how to interpret visual stimulus. So Jesus must have healed that as well. They had doctors in those days who could heal some things, The man says in verse 32, this sort of thing, unheard of. It's a big, loud miracle. But I want to say there's another miracle in this chapter, which happens more gradually, more subtly. It's actually bigger and better. Now, just think for a minute. If you were the blind beggar, sitting by the side of the road, somebody comes and puts mud on your eyes, how would you react? You might berate them for abusing a disabled person. If they implied that healing was on offer, you might rudely tell them to pull the other one. This guy's response is captured in just a few words in verse 7. He went, he washed, and he came back seeing. Why does he do this? I reckon it's because he knew he had nothing to lose. He had nothing else to do. He didn't have any dignity to preserve, so he gave it a go. Also, I don't think he knew anything much about Jesus at this point. When the neighbours ask him about it, he says it was done by the man they call Jesus. Not Jesus, that great teacher, or Jesus, the Son of Man, just the man they call Jesus, like he's overheard a conversation with this guy's name in it. And when the neighbours say, where is this guy now? He says, I don't know. So in verse 13, he's brought before the Pharisees so they can check out what's happened. And they make him tell his story. And just like when he's talking to the neighbours, he explains it very simply. He put mud on my eyes and I washed and now I see. The Pharisees are divided. This guy's not keeping a Sabbath law, but he is doing amazing signs. So they ask the man himself, verse 17, what do you say about him? And the man who's now recounted his story a few times ventures the opinion he's a prophet. Now, the Pharisees do not want him to be right. They've got their system. God's law says no work on the Sabbath. Their system says making mud is work. If this guy Jesus is a prophet sent from God and he's making mud on the Sabbath, it messes up the whole thing. So they did what authority figures always do when things get serious. They call his parents. And if you notice, the parents seem like they have very good lawyers. It makes me think of a congressional inquiry where the lawyer puts their hand over the microphone, whispers in the ear, I don't recall. They are very, very careful, aren't they, not to say anything that will incriminate them. They say, yes, he's always been blind. They don't want to perjure themselves. They say, yes, he can see now. That's apparently pretty obvious. How that happened? No idea. This Jesus guy? Don't know a thing about him. Because they're scared. So, verse 24, the Pharisees call the man back in. They make him go over it one more time. And he sticks to his real simple story. Verse 25, one thing I know. I was blind, but now I see. They push him harder. Come on, we don't even know where this guy comes from. Verse 31, the man grows in confidence and exasperation. This is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. Nobody has ever heard of someone opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Now, this was gutsy. We've already heard that the Pharisees had decided that anyone who confessed Jesus as the Christ would be cast out of the synagogue. And for this outburst, that's what they do to him. Now, the synagogue was the centre not just of religious life, but also of communal life. So being thrown out of the synagogue was like having your country club membership cancelled, but worse. But unlike his parents, this man who's been forced to go over his story again and again just can't keep quiet. After this, verse 35, Jesus hears what's happened. He goes to find the man and he says to him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" Now, bear in mind that the last time this guy was with Jesus, he was blind. So he doesn't know who he's looking at. That's why he says, who is he that I may believe in him? And Jesus says, you have seen him. And it is he who's speaking to you. And the man says, Lord, I believe. And he bows down and worships him. This man has received sight in more ways than one. As he washed in the pool, suddenly he became able to see the light of day. But after that, as he reflected on, who is this guy who can heal me with his spit? Gradually, he became able to see the light of the world. John's prologue told us in chapter 1, the light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. But here is a man who has miraculously been brought out of darkness so he can see the light. But there's a miracle that doesn't happen in this chapter. As the man who was healed progresses towards seeing who Jesus really is, the Pharisees interrogating him become more and more ingrained in their refusal to see Jesus rightly. Here's the miracle that didn't happen. The Pharisees hear about the healing that's happened. It's on the Sabbath, that's funny, but he's doing amazing signs. Parents, was he really blind before? Yes, okay. Well, the prophet Isaiah did say that when God comes to act, the deaf will hear and the eyes of the blind will see and the humble will rejoice. And that when God rescues his people, the eyes of the blind will be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. And that the coming servant of the Lord will be a light for the Gentiles, to open eyes that are blind, to free captives and release those who sit in darkness. And here we are, still effectively in exile, ruled by the Romans, waiting for God to act. We have to go and find this Jesus. He seems to be the Messiah. That's the miracle that didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? I think that partially, looking at verse 22, it's because they'd reached their conclusions before they examined the evidence. And partially, looking at verse 16, it's because they loved their system, especially the Sabbath law. And if Jesus couldn't fit within their predefined boundaries, then they couldn't accept him. But ultimately, I think the reason this miracle didn't happen is because they were confident in themselves. They're confident in their background. They say, we are disciples of Moses. They're confident in their knowledge. We know God has spoken to Moses. We know this man is a sinner. And they're confident in their standing before God, which is why they're not going to let this man born in sin teach them anything. Jesus summarizes it all in verse 39. For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. And some Pharisees over here, and they say, we're not also blind, are we? Jesus responds, if you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say we see, your guilt remains. Jesus has come to shake things up. Elsewhere he says, the last will be first and the first will be last. He says, I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. He says, all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. So here he's saying that he's come into the world so that those who know that they are blind may be given sight, and that those who are confident in their ability to see may become blind. This is the difference between the man who was healed and the Pharisees. The Pharisees' confidence in themselves is what blinds them, so they can't see the light of the world, and they stay in the darkness of sin. But the man who was begging on the side of the road, he knew he was needy, he knew he was powerless, and although his exact reasoning was off, he knew that he was guilty before God. This humble neediness is the reason his eyes could be opened, and he could come from darkness into the light of eternal life. At the beginning of the story, the disciples are assuming that being guilty of sin is what causes a person to be physically blind and therefore humbled. But here in the end, Jesus says, no, it's the other way around. Actually, it's the spiritual blindness caused by self-confidence that causes you to remain guilty of sin. Now, a good exercise to do as we read stories like this in the Gospels is to ask, what character am I in this story? You might be the blind man just after he's washed his face. You've had a little bit of exposure to Jesus and you're trying to figure out what to make of him. And if that's you, then this story shows us the thing to do is to keep going over that evidence. The blind man had one event to reflect on. We've got four whole books of stuff that Jesus did. Going over that evidence is what will lead us to see who Jesus really is. Alternatively, you might be the parents. They had a pretty good idea about Jesus, but they didn't want trouble. They didn't want conflict, so they kept quiet. They don't come across so well in this story, do they? Are you the parents? Is it fear of conflict with spouse, parents, children? Is that what's driving you to keep quiet? Are you the parents? I think many of us live in danger of being the Pharisees. Yeah. Come back. Yeah, Pharisees. We live in a developed country in the 21st century. We're confident of our place in the world. We're confident in our ability to make things work. We manage our time, we manage our finances, we manage our households, we can solve most problems, and for everything else, we have very quick access to Google. The danger is that we'll get in the habit of saying to ourselves, like the Pharisees, we know, we know, we know. We can see, we can see, we can see. And Jesus says it's this kind of self-confidence that causes people to be blind when it comes to understanding him. And if we fail to understand him, we'll remain guilty before God. I want to urge us to be the man when he meets Jesus again. He's the character who keeps saying, I was blind, I was blind, I was blind. I was helpless, I was ignorant, I was guilty. But now, because of Jesus, only because of Jesus, I can see. And he bowed down on the ground and worshipped him. I was blind, but now I see. May those be our words, always. Amen.